Everybody, you can tell I'm going to preach today because I'm wearing one of my I Might Be Preaching Today shirts. I'm so glad all of you are here. Thank you for joining us. Today is part three of Taboo 2 that we started 1 year ago. How's that? We started last summer these taboo topics, and last summer, was it June? Summertime. Okay, if you missed them, or if you want to review them, go back, watch those. And if you have questions, you can ask. And all of our sermons for the last long time are online. So if you have questions about those, please ask. So as a refresher, why are we calling this the Empire? The Elephant Strikes Back? Because it's the concept of having something big right here in the room with us that we all know is there and that we either talk about or don't talk about. And thankfully, we as a church and our leadership decided we're going to talk about this stuff. One way or another, we're going to talk about this tough stuff. And why do we call it taboo? Because it's tough. And there are lots of reasons that churches don't talk about this stuff. Sometimes, they might just wimp out. I hope that's not the case. But sometimes it's just not easy. Age appropriate, little ones might just be above their comprehension might not be quite appropriate, and you don't want to go home and have to answer those questions and then thank the pastor later for bringing it up here in church. So we've been really good, hopefully, about telling everybody what's coming up, what this is all about. We've had it online. We've told people weeks, a year in advance this is coming up. Today, it's okay. We can all stay right here. Men? I don't know. We'll see. Because today we are talking about the men's role in church. I'll get there in just a second. Part of our intro here has been, we lay the groundwork, we have some review, we have some rules. One of the rules is we can disagree avec moi, with me, all right? With Pastor Kyle, with Audrey, with Pat, people up here. And this isn't just during this taboo time. This is all the time. This is everything we're talking about, everything we're doing, if there's a disagreement, that's okay because I am not Jesus. I'm human. I'm fallible. Likewise, I would hope you recognize that you are too out there and that the words coming out of my mouth, the sender, basic communication, traveling through space, being received by the receiver, comes from my knowledge and my experience and my brain and my mouth and my turns of phrase and my weirdness to your weirdness and your knowledge and your brain, and you might hear it differently than I intended. I may have misspoken. Or you might just be upset and say, harumph, I don't like that, but please come talk to us. Come talk to us. If you feel like there's something that you didn't like that you heard, let's figure it out. Again, I will reiterate, this is at all moments, at all times, and everything we do. If I see you in the grocery store and I say something, you go, well, that was weird. Come talk to me later. I don't want to find out that there was something that you either resented or something you harbored that you pushed down that you hid. And they're like, that's Scott, man, he said that thing that really put a bee in my bonnet, which I think is what the kids say. Come talk, because we don't want the and you to go away, or you to avoid the issue. Okay? Now, I'm asking because I'm up front today for extra grace. I'm going to be talking about generalities, some specific terms, but I'm going to be using terms like masculine and feminine. I'm going to be talking about culture. I'm going to be talking about the ebb and flow of things with some nuances, okay? I can't cover everything. And I'm too daft and too dim to figure out everything. So, extend grace. And then we go back to come have a conversation. If I say something you didn't understand or something that was confusing or something that may have been hopefully not flat out wrong. Okay? Okay. Are we all in agreement here? Nods. Good. Okay. I don't see any no. No one glaring at me. All right. Thank you, Brian. Part of our review, 2 weeks ago, we talked about how we spend our time, money, and effort or energy, our time, talent, treasure, and where that goes. And in looking at that, have you had a chance to think about it? I hope so. What's your highest priority? What is taking up your time, money, your effort? And then last week, I'm thankful that Pastor Kyle went first because I am stealing so much from what he said. It's not going to be a rehash, but he had such good information that today there's a lot that mirrors what he said. So when we roll into this, you're going to see a little bit that's the same. I'm talking about the role of men in church. That is my topic. That is where we're going. This is what we're going to understand. Hopefully, women, you are not allowed to check out. Okay? Men, I need you. We're gonna be here. All eyes up here, all right? The role of men in church. This has so much to it. There are whole ministries dedicated to this topic. And when I started researching, quite a while ago actually, if you can believe it, I really enjoy this topic. I enjoy what we can learn, but there is so much. And I feel like I do say that a lot when I'm up front. There is so much. And I have 10,000 tabs open, and I have multiple books. And I'm referencing, hopefully I won't give you too much, and we can get down to the basics. Because this is for men, we need the basics, right? Get to the point, Scott. All right, I will. Foundational element from last week doesn't change. Men and women are different. There is no denying that. Not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. There is overlap. But God created us, men and women, differently. Genesis 1:27, he created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him male and female. He created them. And I'm thankful for that. He created a variety. He created an amazing world. He created a great way for relationships to happen. I'm thankful for that. And I think God was too, because he declared those differences to be good. Because right a few verses down, he saw everything that he'd made. Behold, it was very good. We're going to work from that foundation. We talked about that last week. We have men, we have women. We talked about women's roles. We talked about the overlap. We're going to continue on with men. And last week, we talked about how the culture has seen this issue. We moved into how the church has seen this issue. And there's a lot of overlap from that. Those are hard to pull apart. It's hard to separate how the culture affects the church. But hopefully, throughout it all, we will look to what the Bible says. And that is my ultimate goal today, to set aside whatever cultural effects, however that's bled into the church and how that affects our mindset. We're going to get to the Bible. But we're going to do a little snapshot here, starting with the culture. Now, I took all this. I referenced the website at the end. Great website for men's ministry issues and statistics. If I put my, we didn't know, is it a bibliography? Is it works cited on a PowerPoint? What is it? Does anybody know? Anybody go to college recently? I have no idea. So if you make a PowerPoint, the website has tons and tons of references, and I'm going to make them available if you want to know, and we'll put them, I think we'll put them in the YouTube link as well, where I got this information. So, okay, right now, the typical U.S. congregation draws an adult crowd that is 61% female and 39% male. And this gender gap shows up in all the age categories of the adult. So 18 to 118, it's 61% female, 39% male. And then with all of those people who go to church, on any given Sunday, there are 13 million more adult women in America's churches. And these numbers come from big studies, large studies, and they do span a good amount of years, but they've stayed pretty true for quite a while. We keep going. As recently as June of 2022, 36% of women say they went to church last week, either in person or online, and COVID had a big thing to do with all that, the stupid years, whereas only 24% of men did. That's just under one quarter of men saying that they go to church. And between those Sundays, those midweek activities draw 70 to 80% female participants. Now, this is a snapshot, a very slim, small snapshot of the current culture of the American church. Now, I did see something, that there's a trend that's changing, but it doesn't really look good. And I didn't want to talk about it too much because it's just this like last spring that these numbers came out. The women numbers have dropped. I want to look more into it. That's changing just recently. I don't know if it's good or bad. I wanted to see, there wasn't a lot to amplify those numbers. But this is how it's been really and still trends to today. And so from davidmurrow.com, this is his quote, "Christian universities are becoming convents. The typical Christian college in the U.S. enrolls almost two women for every one man." and fewer than 10% of U.S. churches are able to establish or maintain a vibrant men's ministry. Okay, that was painful for me. Those were numbers. A lot of numbers. But this wouldn't be a Scott talk without history. How did we get to this place? I'm going to pause right here. When I say, how do we get to those numbers? How is the modern church? Why does it look like that? You don't have to call it out. What popped into your brain? Was it the internet? Did the internet change everything? Was it the 80s? I don't know. wireless telephones. The 60s. Cultural revolution. Our hippie moms and dads and grandparents. Huh? Yes? Did that one come to mind? What about World War II? Lots of men went overseas, and women had to take up the traditional male responsibilities. Wait, you got an answer back there? The 20s and the Depression into the 30s, World War I? Was it Alexander Graham Bell on the telephone? You got an idea back there? Do you want to call it out? That's good, but I'm going to surprise you all. Because we can trace. Now, this is one part of the whole, okay? But we're going to focus on this. This is a big one. Whew. We can go back to the 13th century where the seeds of this was started. And it continued through to this day. I'm not going to get into all the details. In the 13th century, they really took the idea of the bride. Christ, bridegroom, bride, church, that whole idea, and amplified it. And it entered into all the iconography. It entered into the ways of worship and the importance, the veneration of Mary, and the songs. And 13th century is a very general term because we're talking Middle Ages, we're talking Europe, we're talking huge swaths of land of England down to Italy and the Middle East and so forth. But we're not going to dwell on that. But that was where the seeds of this female veneration, what they called bridal mysticism, came into play. And it didn't go away because it persevered through, and what really affected us was in the 17th century in America. Puritans bringing their church and their theology to, I keep wanting to say the United States, wasn't then, to the New World, to America. And I'm not going to focus on the what exactly here, but I want to focus on that it was prevalent. Because we have a Puritan preacher, Cotton Mather, quoted as saying, there are far more godly women in the world than godly men. I have seen it without going a mile from home. That in a church of 300 or 400 communicants, there are but a few more than 100 men. All the rest are women. So he's saying about 1/4 of the congregation in the 1600s is men. So then we move forward to the 1700s. We have a historian, Richard Shields. He said 59% of all new members from 1730 to 69 were women. Figures for Southern churches were the same. 1792, women outnumbered men in the churches, 65% to 35, though men outnumbered women in the general population. So we've got the effects of the 1300s coming through to 17th century America, and they're writing about it in the middle of the 1700s, and then they're writing about it all the way up until almost 1900, the turn of the 20th century. A man named Cortland Myers wrote a book, Why Do Men Not Go to Church? And he has lots of ideas in his book. Oh, it's available digitally, and I didn't read all of it, but it was so prevalent that at the turn of the century, he felt that that book was necessary. And not long after that, the New York Times wrote that 69% of worshipers, they polled Manhattan, are women. Almost 70% in Manhattan. So this goes all the way up through the 1800s, the turn of the 20th century, and what had happened leading up to that was another thing because it was such a prevalence, this bridal mysticism, this feminization of church, that it brought rise to what was called muscular Christianity. And it is what you believe, what it sounds like. It took the idea, the notion, it pushed back of that feminization of church, but also that men were a bunch of wimps. And it literally was muscular, lifting weights, exercising, being strong, being swole, and it was encouraged and brought about with the help of the YMCA. That was in response to this 20th century notion of there being very few men and a lot of women in church. So we have this bridal imagery, this bridal mysticism, this feminine idea. Again, I will reiterate, it's not always cut and dry about feminine and masculine, but we have this feminine imagery that is pervasive in all of church, and it becomes synonymous with the Christian church in the United States. So then we come to a relatively modern age, and I'm a youth group kid from the 90s. We were saying having a personal relationship with Jesus. That's what we said. I went on mission trips, and I said it. And that's not wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. It's never spelled out like that in the Bible, but the idea of Jesus wants to get to know you, and he wants you to understand him like a best friend, like better than a best friend, like your bestest best friend they tell all your secrets to. But we have this overlapping idea of brides and hugging, and Jesus is my boyfriend, and it does not resonate with men. I don't know about you if you grew up in church and you heard this idea. It didn't always hit with me, and I sought to understand it, and there are some songs that I don't like them, but it came to this personal relationship where Jesus needs to be your bestie. And more than a bestie, like a huggy cuddle bestie. And so I was doing my research. I was typing clickety clack on away, and my darling bride who loves me came to check on me, and I believe she gave me a kiss on the cheek, which is her custom. And she said, "How you doing? Doing all right?" I said, I'm down the rabbit hole in research, but you gotta hear this quote from like 1390 from a nun. And it was all about being in love with Jesus and Jesus' love and compassion and feeling Jesus. And I was expecting her to go, "Ooh, that's gross." And she went, "Huh, well, no, that's kind of how it's supposed to be." And I was like, "You were wrong, my darling." I was mad. I got upset with her. I got like, "How could you? This is my point. My point here is wrong." It's not inherently wrong. What I'm trying to say is, we're dudes. Loving and hugging Jesus doesn't quite jive with being men. For the ladies, that's fine, Cassie, because Cassie looked at me, she's like, whatever, and she walked away. But she meant it in all love. She cared for me, and she thought I was crazy, and I thought she was crazy. So that history lesson, I stole, very condensed, from a series of articles that were featured on a website called The Art of Manliness. Is anybody familiar with The Art of Manliness? Good stuff. Not a Christian website, it's okay. But they have lots of good. They've got man skills, like, you know, how to chop down a tree and build a boat and like that sort of stuff. But I'm going to put the reference up there because they're very long articles with many, many, many references about where I got all that information. And it goes on and on. There's a lot to do about what has happened to the mindset and how people perceive the church. So what? Oh, sorry, everybody. This isn't the end. So what? This is the so why do I care question, right? Not the so what do I do. This is the so why do I care? Why do we care? Huh? We just gave all that information. Meh. Okay. Do we? What's the big deal? Well, if the congregation is mostly women, and it has been so for hundreds of years, literally hundreds of years, around the world, and then coming to the United States, and we're talking mostly about the United States, if the congregation is mostly women, then what is the church leadership, ministry, deacons, trustees, all that, what are they to do but to cater to the main demographic, right? They don't want to alienate the people coming in the doors. So it's mostly women, majority women. Let's talk to the women. Again, I don't want to say all of this is bad. I'm just giving reasons. One reason why it's a struggle for men to be here in church, because that keeps men away. Female stuff, girly stuff, huggy-kissy with Jesus, doesn't work. So, et cetera, et cetera. The cycle continues through the centuries. Again, right or wrong for men to respond as such, it's just the way it is. But what that ends up happening is men get sidelined, men get put to the periphery, end up at the perimeter, the guy at the junior high dance standing against the wall, getting pushed to the side, not knowing what to do, and within the church lacks purpose. And even worse, stays outside the church, not finding that purpose in Jesus that we want. So what are we going to do? Do we want men in church? No. They're obnoxious. Men are annoying. Do we need men in church? Hopefully you realize these are rhetorical questions, because of course. Jesus built his entire ministry with 12 guys. And there were women involved. But the core of his ministry was started with a bunch of men. And we heard last week in Galatians that for as many of you as were baptized into Christ have put on Christ, there's neither Jew nor Greek, there's neither slave nor free, there is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. And if you are Christ's, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to promise. In these few verses, we see that we're all together. We're getting rid of the distinctions between us, not amplifying one or the other, and we are being one. So, clearly, logically, yes, we want men in our church. And we look through the Old Testament and the New Testament, and there are, I can't say countless because I'm sure someone has counted them, there are many, many stories of men being critical, a critical part of the Old Testament and the new Christian church. And then the letters, there are numerous letters, but in Titus 2, where in Titus and in Timothy, we see guidelines, we see what it should look like to be a man, to be a leader, to be a deacon in a church. But we, for instance, he's writing, but as for you, teach what accords with sound doctrine. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith and love and in steadfastness. On to verse 6, likewise urge the younger men to be self-controlled. A letter to men to talk about the men. We're all one. We're neither male or female. We are one. And then, yes, the men need to be there. Aha! So a real so what? But I'm not quite done. Women, this is from last week. Remember I said, remember that from the review? We need your help and your understanding. When Cassie came and said, yeah, that makes sense. And I went, no, it doesn't. Understand us. Like the words coming out of my mouth, going through your ears. We don't all operate the same way. But men, remember last week? We need the women's help. So we can't push them away. You can't bristle like I did. You're wrong, Cassie. We need their help. But what do I do with that? What's the application? We have all of this history working against us, which was the reason I talked about all that. We have all this, these hundreds of years of men kind of feeling most times a little odd, a little weird. And men need a purpose. Like I said, they can't be pushed to the side and lack a purpose. So what do we do? What's our purpose? First, be a servant like Christ. We have many, 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 many examples to draw from. I picked a few. Mark 9:35, Jesus sat down and he called the 12. And he said to them, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. This is one of those flipsy-flopsy Jesus things that I really like. That's really like everything Jesus is. To be first, you've got to be last and a servant of all. So first, start with a servant heart. We have Ephesians 2 as well, Ephesians 5:25, that specifically talks to husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, a sacrifice. Jesus literally died for the church. And he's saying, well, husbands, you might have to do that. But that is the servant, the ultimate servant, to give yourself up. And then within the Beatitudes, we could talk completely about how the Beatitudes apply to who shall inherit the earth, who will be in the kingdom of heaven, the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. To step back and serve is an ultimate form of leading, of showing your humility, of showing who is first. And it's not you. So in saying that, don't be the world's tough guy. Don't be what the world expects, to always lead from the front, always be in charge with shouting and anger or with guns blazing. Sometimes it's necessary, but that's not part of this. You don't need to be the world's tough guy. The servant heart is where you should begin. I didn't want to make a rhyme there. Servant's heart, where you should start. Start with a servant's heart and give up yourself first. And the next, while Christ was compassionate, and we see all those examples of being a servant, of letting others go first, of turning the other cheek, of not starting the fight, he was not weak. And frequently, the ultimate show of strength is not fighting, not punching, not wrestling, but being strong in the face of oppression. Because he showed true strength in Matthew 21. He did not allow injustice, money changers at the temple. He got pretty peeved, mildly peeved, and flipped tables and caused a bit of a ruckus. 40 days in the wilderness, has anybody done that? Anybody been in the wilderness for... And not just like Western New York wilderness, where you're never 10 minutes away from a Dollar General. Real wilderness with the animals and the elements. Maybe elephants. I don't know. Not the elements. But then you throw in Satan's temptation while he's out in the wilderness. And then he defended a woman caught in adultery. And they were threatening to kill him. If you remember the John series, the whole book is them plotting to kill him. Every word out of his mouth, like, we're going to kill him. We have to kill that guy. And he kept talking, defended a woman caught in adultery. And all the while, he defied the leaders of the time and their customs, all of the customs, by, in one instance, just associating with tax collectors and sinners, prostitutes, sitting down and eating with them, which was like spending time with family at that time. But then really the only example we really need is his death on the cross. And not only a death on the cross, he had to carry his implement of death, his implement of murder, up a big hill after being beaten. And beaten is an understatement. Ultimately dying on the cross, which is what we referenced back a few slides ago with his death for the church. And in Paul's letter to Corinth, I like this. Sums up a lot of what came before this. Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men. This is the English Standard Version, act like men. Some say be courageous. Say be strong. But it doesn't end there. We frequently leave out verse 14. Let all that you do be done in love. Going back to that servant mindset. Starting as the servant where others are first. Being strong in what is right. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Let's do the tough thing. All of those things that Jesus did were not easy in the face of constant persecution, constant threats of death, throwing stones at him. He did the tough thing. And when that popped up, maybe something came into your mind. What is the tough thing right now for you? But then while we're doing all this, we are called to lead. And we talked about what being in charge means. Not a leader where my way or the highway, but a headship being ultimately responsible. and I think of a ship. Can't have a Scott talk without a maritime reference, right? Kyle referenced military last week, and it's perfect. I like that idea. I like the notion. In the corporate world, or if you watch Office Space or The Office, or, you know, people pass the buck all the time. It's a lot easier out there in the normal world than it is in the military, where there's a chain of command, where there's ultimately someone in charge. But I'm going to take it a step further, because you put all those people on a ship, especially in times before communication could reach the ship, the captain was it. The captain was responsible for everything, and is responsible for everything, but didn't have to do everything. He's the head. Cap, did you know that? Kaput, captain, head, that's the same, sorry. He is in charge, but he's not the chief engineer. He's not in charge of security. He's not in charge of navigation. But if the engine blows up, the chief engineer is going to be in trouble, but the captain has to report to the admiral. If the ship runs aground, yes, the navigator is going to be in deep trouble, but the captain ultimately has to make an account for what happened to his ship. And so, last week, Pastor Kyle talked about submission. But the point here today is that second part. When we're partnering together with one another, a group or an individual, to complete a task with the understanding that they, meaning the person in charge, meaning the captain, meaning the men, are ultimately responsible for the outcome. And you, the women, that was the part last week, are responsible for your role or task, but that we are ultimately responsible. Taking the headship, starting with the servant heart, sacrificing ourselves, being strong in what needs to be done, choosing the tough thing, but knowing we are ultimately responsible. If our ship runs aground, who do we have to report to? Well, 1 Corinthians, now I commend you because you remember me and everything and maintain the traditions even as I delivered them to you. But I want you to understand that the head of every man is Christ. The head of the wife is her husband, and the head of Christ is God. That's the chain of command. We are answerable to Christ, to those that we give responsibility, and we may put people in charge of things that we're not good at. Kyle referenced the finances. Same here. I hate numbers. I give that responsibility to my wife. But I'm ultimately responsible if we run our house aground. Sorry, mixing metaphors. I am ultimately responsible. Another slide stolen from last week. Responsibility always rests on the one who is given the task. And we saw back at the very beginning, God told Adam, you are responsible for what I'm telling you to do. And then we go into the New Testament, and we have Paul laying out who's responsible in the church, and he points all the way back to the very beginning. Men, do not fail. Do not allow the gap to happen where someone has to step in, where someone else has to be responsible. You are responsible. So I had a list that kind of mashed things together in my next slide. They're not exactly synonyms and antonyms here. But what has happened is, everybody, we choose the path of least resistance. But what has, unfortunately, words like this have become associated with a man. Because it's easy. It's easy to be cruel and mad, to hurt people. It's easy to be inwardly focused, to be selfish, to think of yourself first. And at the same time, while you're doing all that, putting up walls, putting up your shields, living on an island, however you want to say that, and never changing. There's a long list of all the easy things because we all do them because they're easy. These take almost no effort. To remove yourself, to not listen, to be hurtful, to say angry things, thoughtless things. And my so what back there, what's tough? Should have a question mark there, I'm sorry. I could have put the fruit of the Spirit up here. That would work. But compassion, choosing kindness, Choosing peace with your neighbor, peace with your spouse, peace with your coworkers is way harder than slamming the door, never talking to anybody. What about getting called out? You put your walls up, you live on an island, you don't go around anybody who you think is going to say something tough. But getting called out, hey man, you really messed up. Hey man, you've got to change that. Hey man, well, because we're guys, you suck. Sometimes we got to hear that. And that hurts. But that's tough. What about being the guy who's got to say that? Taking a guy aside, taking a friend aside, saying, you got to fix this. That could end a relationship, those two things. And while you're doing all that, why don't you add to it and get down in the mud with that friend and shoulder the burden with them? Because you'd be a bad friend if you said, you are doing a terrible job, see ya, and then left them. No, that's tough. And all of this is a sacrifice because you could just sit on the couch. You could just stay home. You could just stay in your castle. You could have your walls up and be thinking about yourself and what your next meal is going to be and what you're going to watch on TV. But there is sacrifice. There is sacrifice in being here today. There is sacrifice in coming to a small group. There is sacrifice in being part of a ministry. There is sacrifice in mentoring someone and talking to someone and caring and having compassion. I almost deleted this next one because I hate that I cry. Hate it. And my loving wife, see, I'm going to, what the? I hate that I cry. But she reminds me, you know, dummy, your grandpa, my grandfather, World War II veteran on a destroyer in the North Atlantic and an aircraft carrier in the Pacific, father of seven children, cried a lot. I said, tell her, shut up. I don't want to listen to you. But she's right every time because this is tough stuff, letting your guard down. And then in all of this, there's no specific order. Telling the truth. Being truthful with your friends. Being truthful with your spouse. Being truthful in everything you do. None of this is easy. So I feel like I kind of shoehorned this last statistic in. It's from the same reference. But this is what it's boiling down to. It's a full circle of, oh, this one makes me very sad. Over 70% of the boys who are being raised in church will abandon it during their teens and 20s. Many of these boys will never return. I hate that. So what I'm asking is, men, do the tough thing. And I was reluctant to say man up or be the man because that doesn't really work. And I could have just summed it up with that and gone around and punched you all in the arm maybe. But don't just do the tough thing. Do the tough thing right now instead of living in fear of doing the tough thing. And failing the women in their church. Failing the children of our church. Because without strong men, we don't have a strong church. And without a strong church, we don't have a strong culture that's looking at God, a strong society. And we have to break out of this cycle. And I am thankful for all of you guys that are here now and all of the guys that are involved in my life. And we have done the tough things. Don't stop. And yes, maybe I am preaching to the choir here. I'm preaching to myself. I am not all the things I put up on the screen. I wish I was. But if we keep going, we keep doing the tough things, all those tough things I listed, and then probably hundreds of more things, we will be a strong church family. We will be more like Christ. We will embody his love and compassion, his servanthood, his strength. Strength that was so difficult that he died. do the tough thing. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for your example. Thank you for the example of Christ and his death on the cross. And that's really all that matters. But thank you for the men here and the good examples we've had in our lives. And I pray that we don't back down. I pray that we are the examples that the women, the young people, our friends, our coworkers need. I thank you that we can be together. I thank you for people making the sacrifice to be here, making the sacrifice to pray, making the sacrifice to be closer to you. And it's in your name we pray, amen.